Let's crack in into hour number two. I'm Jim Rome. I am live. I'm in Southern California. I'm in the same studio where I've been throughout the entire pandemic. Very grateful to be here. Love the job. Love the gig. Love talking to you clones. Love reading some of your bull crap. It's all good.
Live.
I am live, and I am hyped. On top of that, coming up next segment, a chance to talk to an old friend. He is the former NFL MVP. In fact, he won the MVP award in 2005, Sean Alexander. He used to come on the show quite a bit back in the day, but I have not talked to him in a long time, so I'm eager to do so. Ray Ratto came in hour number one, so we're coming off a really good first hour. We are also coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. Some reaction to Rick in Buffalo, who ended hour number one. Cal in Vegas is in. He tweets, Rick in Buffalo ain't nothing but a Cal in Vegas wannabe. 1 for 3, C1 tweets. Now that was a great call from Rick in Buffalo. It's one of my favorite things about the show, that something can happen, everybody can hear it and see it in two totally different ways. Cal in Vegas is like, man, that guy ain't nothing but a Cal in Vegas wannabe. Yet Carl is saying, that was a great call. I'm going to take Carl's side on that. That was a great call. Matt in Vancouver, one of the subjects or topics of that call, said, quote, Rick in Buffalo is Raider Mike on meth. That's not true either. Listen, for what it's worth, if my opinion matters for anything at all, and when I say if my opinion matters for anything at all, what I really mean is my opinion matters most of all. Rick in Buffalo is, without question, one of the best callers ever on this show. And if Rick in Buffalo is one of the best callers ever on this show, that in effect makes him one of the best callers ever in sports talk radio history. He's not anybody's wannabe. He's not some knockoff of some other caller on meth. He's his own dude. He's great. He makes this show so much better, whether you like or hate him. In fact, that's why he makes this show so much better, because either you like him or hate him. And he likes to fight people. He said it himself, his two hobbies. Calling this show, Jim, and punching people in the face. Everybody needs a hobby. He's got two. All right, 1-800-636-8686. So we're 72 hours out from the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. 72 hours from football's Elite Eight battling to make it into football's Final Four. And yet here I am, 72 hours out from that. And I'm going to spend some precious airtime, precious real estate, talking about the New York Giants. Why is that? Believe me, I don't want to, but I have to. Because yesterday, New York Giants head coach Joe Judge finally pulled himself up a chair at the accountability table. He ordered a main course of common sense and then slugged a giant glass of ice-cold reality. Better late than never, Joseph, I guess. Let's go back 10 days. You'll remember then-Eagles coach. That's how long ago that was. Then-Eagles coach Doug Peterson putting in third-stringer Nate Sudfeld late in a close game against the Washington football team with all sorts of playoff implications on the line. Not for Philly, mind you, but for the Giants and the WFT. If the Giants win that game, or I should say if the Eagles win that game, the Giants are dancing in the first round as divisional winners. But the Eagles did not win that game, in large part because Dougie P waved the white flag, allegedly, and ran Sudfeld in. You know, in a one-score game, in a close game. So, why? Who cares? Ancient history, 10 days ago, better draft pick, hates the Giants, really want to work in Sudfeld. I don't know, and I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn because it's ancient history. And so is Doug Peterson, by the way. But the morning after that game, when the Giants went from potential division winners to cleaning out their lockers, head coach Joe Judge went with an all-time verbal subtweet. He didn't name names, but he didn't have to. Everybody knew this soapboxing was about Dougie Peterson and the Eagles.
To look at a group of grown men who I asked to give me effort on a day-in, day-out basis and to empty the tank, and then I can look them in the eye and assure them that I'm always going to do everything I can to put them at a competitive advantage and play them in a position of strength. To me, you don't ever want to disrespect those players and their effort and disrespect the game. The sacrifices that they made to come into work every day and test before coming in, to sit in meetings spaced out, to wear masks, to have shields over those masks, to go through extensive protocols, to travel in unconventional ways, to get text messages at 6:30 in the morning telling practice is going to be canceled, we have to do a virtual day, okay? To tell them, please don't have your family over for Thanksgiving. Please avoid Christmas gatherings. We know it's your wife's birthday. Let's make sure we put that one off to the off season. There's a number of sacrifices been made by all the players and coaches in this league. There's a number of sacrifices that come along as well with the family members, the people connected to them. To disrespect the effort that everyone put forward to make this season a success for the National Football League, to disrespect the game by going out there and not competing for 60 minutes and doing everything you can to help those players win, we will never do that as long as I'm the head coach of the New York Giants.
You mean do those things that every other team and every other player had to do around the league throughout the year? Blah, 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 blah. How many times are we going to hear this? That rant is littered with the same old word salad that Judge is consistently vomiting up. Him rambling on about the sacrifices everybody had to make and their families had to make for an NFL season to become a reality. How hard these guys all work. How much it all means to them. Never mind that pretty much everybody in the league works really hard and really cares and had to make tremendous sacrifices. I mean, doing all that does not make you unique or better than anybody else. Bad enough to keep playing that broken record, but even worse, because he didn't address the only thing that really did matter, the fact that his try-hard crew was 6-10. He didn't own that fact. That if you're 6-10 in the worst division ever, that's pretty much the only thing that really does matter in a business like that. And no one gives a damn about anything else, nor should they. He didn't mention that they were playing some of their worst football when it mattered most. He didn't mention that they lost 3 of their last 4 with the division hanging in the balance. And that they didn't have anybody to blame but themselves. He didn't get to any of that. Just that, well, you know, our guys work really, really hard, and we really, really care, and it's too bad the other guy doesn't, or we wouldn't be in this position, when in fact you would be. You would be, regardless of what the Eagles did or did not do, because you are what your record says you are, and your record says you're 6-10. And for some reason, Judge just could not get his head wrapped around the most obvious thing ever. And the only reason that I'm still talking about that now, with the divisional playoffs coming up, is because Judge was asked about it yet again. Except this time, he finally started to get it. This is what he had to say yesterday on Boomer and Geo.
Look, that's our fault. Point blank. We have to do better. 6-10 is not a playoff team. That's reality. That's what it is. You don't deserve to be in the playoffs with that. And our guys know that. They understand that. Our guys are very, you know, realistic at how they look at things. We're very honest and transparent with our team in all moments. We're not trying to sit back and trying to make some kind of excuse, or we're not sitting back trying to paint some picture someone else owes us anything. They don't.
It's a good take, Joe. It's a really good take. I thought so when I said the exact same thing 9 days ago on this radio program. While you were on a Zoom soapbox talking about how the Eagles disrespected the game. When really what you were trying to say is the Eagles disrespected you. And blew any chance of you backdooring your way in. Anyway, welcome to the party, pal.
Welcome to the party, pal.
The reality party, pal. The ownership party, pal. The accountability party, pal. The party where a 6-10 head coach finally admits that his 6-10 team got exactly what it deserved. A 6-10 team does not deserve to be in the postseason, and was owed nothing by anyone. Now, are all of your players who were live tweeting that Eagles WFT game 10 days ago going to own it as well? Because that also was a bad look. Bunch of 6-10 players hammering out entitled hate tweets as they watch their playoff hopes circle the drain, lacking any kind of accountability or self-awareness. You know, the self-awareness that comes along with losing 10 games and playing in the worst division ever. Besides, you want to get right down to it? Joe, nobody's mad outside your locker room that the Giants missed the postseason. Because instead, what we all received was a nice dose of Taylor Heinicke. Taylor Heinicke took us on this amazing 60-minute ride where it looked for a moment that he might actually slay the GOAT himself. Crazy, right? Absolutely crazy that that anonymous player that before that game so many people had never even heard of was standing in and trading haymakers with the GOAT. Crazy when you think that he was a St. Louis Battlehawks quarterback less than even 1 year ago. Am I right, James Kelly?
St. Louis Battlehawks quarterback.
I mean, I'm talking about the St. Louis Battlehawks. It's an amazing name for a team. Am I right, James Kelly?
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Hey, flight deck, what job did Taylor Heinicke hold before the job he currently holds with the Washington football team?
St. Louis Battlehawks quarterback.
Hey, Deck, when The Rock brings back the XFL, which team are you most looking forward to watching?
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Hey, Deck, when you come on for Big Head Bets this coming Friday, what is the one team that you want to talk about?
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Hey, James Kelly, who do you think that Adam Hawk most wants you to talk about when you come on Friday?
St. Louis Battlehawks.
This is literally Hawk's best day in a long time on this show, JK. And you know why? Because you came on this show once and you said this.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Hey, JK, I had to throw Hawk a bone, man. He's been beaten down so long and so hard. And inevitably, when the two of you get into it, you usually get the better of him. So I had to throw the kid a bone. You understand that, right?
Inevitable.
It's inevitable that this would get reset on the program.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Now, having said all that, you will have a chance to respond on Friday during Big Head Bets. It is your segment. You can do whatever you want. You can talk about Hawk, or you can talk about your favorite team.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Anyway, now that Joe Judge has finally accepted the past as his reality, we can all move into the future. Because there are now 8 teams left. And also the St. Louis Battlehawks. No, just kidding, JK. We've got 8 teams left. The 8 teams that deserve to be there. And I cannot wait for these matchups this weekend. Nor can I wait for the Friday edition of Big Head Bets.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
He's weighed in. JK just hit me up with, quote, tricky bleep, dog. It is, man. I get it. St. Louis is tricky. It's all tricky.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
When we come back. Phone lines are open, but as I mentioned, we're going to talk to an old pal, the 2005 NFL MVP, Sean Alexander. I'm setting myself up, aren't I? Like, I hope that this guy is as happy to talk to me as I am to him, because I'm really happy to talk to Sean Alexander. I remember having great conversations with him back in the day. Also, coming up in hour number 3, a linebacker for the Atlanta Falcons, Foye Oluokun. What's your beef?
Is this the beef jerky segment?
I bet James Kelly calls with his beef. Yeah, hey, boss.
Omaha!
Hey, boss. It's flight deck. Yeah, I got a beef. I'm going to beat the crap out of Hawk when I see him. That's coming up at 11:20 Pacific time. Janet's in. Janet must be driving. Janet is in, and she just texted me, quote, please stop playing that.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Why? Why, Pi? Are you now producing from the road? Hey, sweetheart, how's this sound?
St. Louis Battlehawks.
I'm going to come home today from work, and I'm going to pop that on the phone all throughout dinner.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Hi, honey. How was the show? It was amazing. Did you hear this?
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Sean Alexander is next.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Hour number two. Tremendous Wednesday to you. I'm Jim Rome. I'm in Southern California, and I'm fired up. Get to run down one of my guys, a 9-year NFL vet, an NFL MVP, an All-Pro, a 3-time Pro Bowl selection. He was a member of the 2000s All-Decade team, nearly 11,000 yards from scrimmage, 112 career TDs. He was the 19th pick overall in 2000, and today he appears courtesy of the FedEx Air and Ground NFL Players of the Year Award. It recognizes the top quarterback and running back performances of the 2020 NFL season. My guest is Sean Alexander. Sean, it's been a minute or two since you and I have caught up. How are you doing? How is your life? What's going on, Sean?
Man, it is so good to see you, man. This is exciting to be a part of this, you know. Life is good in the midst of this craziness, but it's good, man. I can't complain. Family's healthy and getting bigger, and you know, being a part of the FedEx Air and Ground Players of the Year Award is a lot of fun. That's what I'm doing now, and you know, so it's just going good. How are you doing,
Sean? I'm doing great. I'm doing great. My family's great. My family's not getting bigger, but my family is great. And I'm going to talk to you about FedEx in a minute. But when you mentioned your family's getting bigger, how much bigger? How is your family?
Yeah, so we just found out that we are pregnant with baby number 12.
Wow.
And so it's amazing. Yeah.
Congratulations. That is amazing.
All of ours, no twins, a lot of hard work.
No doubt, Sean. Congratulations. That's great. So let me go back to the very beginning. Like, people know your story, I'm sure, but I'm not sure that everybody knows what that journey really involved. For instance, it's not like you were a star from day one. That's not how that went. For example, when you were playing JV football, you did so as a sophomore. So what were you like as a running back at that point in time?
You know what? From the very beginning, I was always one of those guys that I wanted to score touchdowns. I wanted to make the play, make the big special moment. And so, you know, and then we had some really good running backs at my high school. And one of them ended up playing pro baseball for the Reds. And he got hurt. They put me in the game to run the option, and they pitched it to me, and I took it down the sideline. They were like, wait, hold on a second. So I became in the part of the rotation, and it's just been on from there. And then same thing in Bama, you know, I was behind the SEC first team and SEC second team. So I was a third stringer my freshman year, and they threw me in a game against LSU, and 20 carries, 291 yards later, 4 touchdowns. I became part of the Bama rotation of great running backs, and then got to Seattle and Ricky Waters was there. So I'm just sitting on the bench the whole first year, and Ricky gets hurt. They put me in the game, and I think it was like 170 yards and a touchdown. And then the next one's 150 and 2 more touchdowns. They're like, we need to play you. And so that's always been my, that's been my story, is eventually I'm going to get the time and just go take it over. And so that's how my career's been.
That's great the way you laid that out. Sean Alexander is joining us. That's the way it's always been, high school, college, even the pros. And then after you got that shot in the NFL, the following season, you got your chance. You rushed for more than 1,300 yards. So what was it like to break out that way and show everybody yet again, I can do special things, I just need the opportunity?
Yeah, you know what? I think that's the goal. The goal is always for you to prepare for your moment, and then when it's your turn, you take the shot. You make the big play. You hit the home run. Like, that's what you want. Like, you always are. You should always be building yourself up for that moment where you get to go be the one that that gets to write the story. And you know, and so when everybody does it, whenever you see somebody do it, you kind of smile, because you either want to eventually one day be that guy, or you want to smile and say, yeah, I remember when I got to do that before. But that's always part of the life journey.
Sean Alexander is joining us. You know, you mentioned when you started early on, you wanted to be that guy. You just wanted to get the ball. You wanted to score touchdowns. Sean, there was that game in 2002 against the Vikings where you scored 5 touchdowns in one half. When you think back, what do you remember most about that game?
You know, John Randall was the new defensive tackle that we picked up, and he played all those years with the Vikings. And he was just saying the whole week, man, Sean, don't let us lose this game. We got to win this game. And I knew it was just big to him. And so I kind of came to the game with a chip on my shoulder. And then plus one of my buddies from high school was Randy Moss, and he was the star of their team. And so I always kind of put myself in the thought process of go be greater than their running back, go be greater than their star. And then I studied that week well, and I knew there were some plays that really fit what I wanted to do. And it was just a great game plan, and the ball just bounced the right way a lot. And so I had them 5 touchdowns in the first half. It was crazy and a lot of fun. So I remember Randall coming up to me and being like, man, do it again. And I scored the 3rd touchdown. He's like, what is going on? I'm like, I'll be back. I'm in a groove now, you know. So that was just a fun night.
He was a blast. John Randall was such a great player, and what a huge personality. I mean, Sean, it's one thing to be like that bell cow back, but you had a 5-year stretch where you had, check these numbers, 309 carries, 295 carries, 326, 353, and then 370 carries. Like, running backs talk about what a 300-carry season does to them, the toll that it takes on them, and you did that for 5 straight years. How did you go about taking care of your body and making sure that you could recover and play at such a high level?
Yeah, you know, you do have to take care of your body. So, like, the very basic, you know, masseuses and chiropractors, none of that made any sense to me. Ricky Waters was like, no, you need this. And so he taught me how to be a pro and studying the game and letting yourself loose on game day, but then how to take care of your body. So chiropractors, masseuses, and sauna treatments and things like that. And I remember learning what an infrared sauna was, which is like heating your body. It's the infrared. So it's heating your body from the inside so the blood and the bones can heal faster, where everybody's used to this normal sauna with the hot rocks, and that's heating from the outside in, which is really about sweating and so instead of healing. And so the science and technology for people today in today's game is so much better than ever before, because they're learning how to heal their body and not just protect their body, which is that's what muscles do. Muscles, you build it to protect your bone, where now they're learning how to heal the body as it's going. So the guys today, though they have the ability, because they're bigger and stronger, to have bigger hits and bigger collisions, but they also know how to get healthier faster. And you have to be very intentional with all that as you're churning and training and preparing for every year and every game.
Sean Alexander is joining us. It's a fascinating response, but it's not just the physical. Like, you were very progressive in your thought and probably ahead of your time. But Sean, when I think about the year 2005, you put up nearly 1,900 rushing yards, 27 touchdowns. You were named league MVP, and in part because of what you just said, you were taking care of your body. However, you spent a lot of time working on the mental and spiritual aspects of your play and your game and yourself personally. What was that about? Like, what was your process for building yourself up mentally and spiritually?
You know, at the end of the day, like, I just felt like just mentally, there's this place where you can say, like, hey, this is who God's created me to be. How can I be the best this all the time? And so it's relationships with people, relationships with your line, relationship with your coach, how you're thinking about it, and it expands back out to the bigger pictures of life. And so also playing a violent sport like football, where it's a great sport, it's a team sport, but then also even spiritually, are you willing to take yourself to someplace greater for the greater cause? And so I just always felt like the better I played, the more of a platform I could have to represent Jesus, to represent the love of God, the love of people and family. Those are his perfect plans. That's his perfect team, would be a family. And so that's why I played for. I love the idea of family and team. And I got a lot of that from just learning about Jesus and how faith does that. And so it was just an amazing time. And I feel like my 05 season, I was at very good, healthy places mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, as well as physically.
Sean Alexander is joining us. Sean, really quickly, before I ask you about FedEx, I want to ask you about your other family, the Alabama family. You're a proud Alabama alum. What did you think as you watched Najee Harris and the Crimson Tide win yet another national title?
Yeah, I was so proud of this team. You know, every team is different. I think people used to seeing the name Alabama and they forget that, you know, Najee Harris, though he was a 5-star, had to learn how to play college football at a high level greatly and consistently. And so what he was his freshman and sophomore year compared to his junior year was miles. And it's almost it's almost country miles away from how he played his senior year compared to his sophomore year. So I'm just proud of his growth as a football player, his growth on and off the field. And I was just proud. Same thing with Mac Jones. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he comes in with Tua and the Wonder Triplets, the receivers that we just loved. And Mac was just a good player, but always in his head, always beating his own self up, wanting to be great, but not knowing how to get there. And to watch him get to this year and play so well and be under control and poise, that is the maturation process that you give Coach Saban credit to and the whole Bama family. They've done that well for centuries now, but really these last couple of decades have been just amazing about how to get guys to go play at a high level consistently.
Sean, you're working with FedEx Air and Ground Players for their Player of the Year awards, and I'm glad you are because it brought you and I back together so we can get caught up. What about the work you're doing with them? What are you doing exactly, and how can the fans get involved?
So the FedEx Air and Ground NFL Player of the Year Award, I won it in 05 when I won the MVP that great year you were talking about. And we want to get fans to get out and vote, NFL.com/FedEx, then get on Twitter at NFL. We want fans to get involved because it is a great award highlighting the best player from the air, quarterback, and the best player from the ground, the running back. But it's more than just an award. The FedEx has partnered with Direct Relief, and Direct Relief is a program that they have these great emergency medical care backpacks that are helping about 500 people per bag. And so all of that is about us doing what the FedEx plan is. The FedEx Care Plan is 50 by 50, helping 50 million people by their 50th year, which is 2023. That's the big picture. But we get to squeeze a little bit of football involved with by having the best quarterback and the best running back get sponsored, win the award, and then we give $20,000 per award to the cities to go and help more people, because this is really about more than just an award. It's about helping people. And so they've been doing this for about since 2003, the FedEx Award and their partnership with Direct Relief. And now we get to be a part of impacting more than just having a good time, but impacting families. So it's 50 by 50, 50 million people by 2023. And it's just exciting. It's exciting to be a part of some. So we want fans to get out and vote, be a part of it. Voting now starts now, and it closes February 2nd at 3 p.m.
What a great cause. Sean Alexander appearing courtesy of FedEx Air and Ground NFL Players of the Year Awards. They recognize the top quarterback and running back performances of the 2020 NFL season. He won it himself back in 05. My man, Sean, you sound awesome. You sound great. I'm so glad. And the longer I do this, the more conversations I have, the more conversations like this one mean to me. I think you know where I'm going with that. You and I go way back. So way great back. To get caught up, Sean. So good to hear your voice. Thanks so much for coming on.
No doubt, brother. Have a good one, man. Maybe we'll do it again.
I would love to do it again, Sean. Anytime. Sean Alexander, that's my guy. If you are a longtime listener of the program, you might even go back and remember when Sean would come on when he was just tearing it up. And those numbers are absolutely amazing. Amazing. Like the workload that he had back in the day, averaging 300-plus carries for five consecutive years is absolutely amazing. So my thanks to Sean Alexander. If it sounds like I'm pumped that I got caught up with him, it's because I am. Let's take a short time out. The beef segment is coming up next hour. So again, if you've got something to beef about, you know we do that every single Wednesday. Make sure you get it to me on the phones. Get it to me via social media too, at Jim Rome. Here is your bottom of the hour sports update. Here is Rich Ackerman.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, backed by 24/7 support, free access to product specialists, and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call, click, Grainger.com, or just stop on by. I'm beaming. So happy about that. Sean Alexander was as happy to talk to me as I was to him. That was fun. That was so good to get caught up. Love that. So hopefully we can do that again soon. Some of the reaction is Rome, Sean Alexander. Love this interview. Preach it. Such a good dude. Chad in Orlando. You know, I love some of these interviews that I would do back in the day that we did so long ago that most of the staff doesn't know. Like even Alvy. Alvy, do you remember Sean Alexander coming on the program? All right, Alvy does. But I was talking to D-Dub. Even D-Dub, I think that kind of predated him a little bit. Or D-Dub will say to me sometimes like, hey, why don't we do this guy? How were you with him back in the day? And D-Dub's been with me for almost as long as Alvy. So Sean Alexander, I mean, like, Hawk probably has never even heard of Sean Alexander. Don't act like you have, Adam. And if you have, it's only because of his Seattle ties. Ritt's old enough to be Sean's dad. My point is, I always had this, and I remember all the interviews. I remember all the guys. I remember what it's like talking to these guys. I remember Sean, not only as a player and the workload and how great of a back he was, but I always remember like how happy he was, how upbeat he was, how positive he was, how it was always such an enjoyable time. You remember guys like that, and then if you don't talk to them for a long time, you wonder, like, what's life been like? What's transpired over the years? What's retirement like? Will he show up that same way? And sure enough, all those years go by. It's like friends, right? There's certain people you know and certain friends you have that you can go 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year without talking to them. And then when you do, you know, maybe they move to another state, the world changed, life changed, you can pick up right where you left off. Sean Alexander showed up exactly the same way that he used to. So that's why that was so great. Rome, did Sean just say that he is expecting kid number 12? Are you kidding me? Between him and Phillip, they could have a full 11v11 scrimmage with subs. Matt in Poland Springs.
Unstinking believable.
He and his wife have 12 kids. And he just said it. You know, he's a man of faith. He's a man of family. We're excited. Number 12 is on the way. I don't even know how to respond to that. Like, I've got two, and they're really good kids, and we have help, and it's still a challenge. 12? 12! It's amazing. Dear James Kelly, can you tell us where Austin Huff moved to?
St. Louis.
Geoff and Lincoln. That's true. That's true. Austin came in one day. Austin's a good dude. He was another one. Came to work every day, smile on his face, good attitude, good energy, really enthusiastic. And then came in and said, I've got this opportunity. I'm leaving. And I said, good for you, Austin. Where are you going? And his response to me was,
St. Louis.
Wells in the 360 tweet, Sean Alexander was amazing. We were lucky to have him in the backfield during his prime. That 05 season was insane. I'll never forget watching him ball out every game that year. Wore him. And fellow Seattle legend, Sean Kemp. Breeding entire teams of future sports stars. Anyway, Sean had 27 touchdowns that year. It was an insane year. All right, phone lines are open. I've got Foyer Aluakon coming up at the top of the third hour. In other words, about 15 minutes from right now. And then at 20 past, the beef segment. Adam, how are the beefs? All right, we're setting up nicely. Normally, the beef segment's in hour number two. On Wednesday, you've got yourself an extra hour, so they're coming in. Beefs on social always kill. I need good telephone beefs. What is your beef? Anything you want to beef about, sports or non-sports related. Personal, professional, sports, non-sports. Bring me your beef. We only do this once a week.
Professional.
And remember, coming up after the program today, episode 158, the Jim Rome Podcast starring Joe Thomas. We had a Bills great last week. We're having a Browns great this week. Both teams are in. Both teams advance. Good times. So the NBA is in a tough spot. The NBA is in a tough spot because of COVID. Numerous positive tests, multiple games being postponed, And now what you have is some really rigid protocols that are going into place in an attempt to deal with it. Like, every team in the NBA needs to deal with these new rules, including the Brooklyn Nets. But the Brooklyn Nets are the only team in the league that has to deal with another challenge altogether. Kyrie Irving. You know, the guy who seemed to be claiming that he wanted to be a player coach back in the offseason. Yeah, that guy did not play for the Nets in last night's game against Denver. He didn't play in the game before that, or the game before that, or the game before that. Last night, then, was the fourth straight game that he's missed. He's expected to miss tonight's game against New York, and then Saturday's game against Orlando. So, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six. Maybe six. Six games is a decent chunk of the season. By Saturday, the Nets would have played 14 games, and Kyrie, it looks like, is going to miss six in a row. So why? Injury? Positive test? Answer, not sure. Nobody really knows. It's been called, quote, personal leave. So what does personal leave involve? Also not exactly clear. When is it over? Not exactly clear. But there was the video that surfaced of Kyrie on Monday partying maskless at his sister's birthday party in Orange, New Jersey. Hey, I'm pro-family. I'm all about it. I'm all for celebrating your sister's birthday. That's great. That's awesome. Family comes first. But maybe, and hear me out on this, maybe partying maskless during a pandemic is not the best idea. Maybe it's not the best idea, especially given the NBA's rules on COVID. Maybe partying maskless at your sister's birthday party during a pandemic is not the best idea when you've been away from the team for a week on personal leave. Again, not my business. If somebody says they're off on personal leave, I'm going to assume that they're dealing with something really painful, something really challenging, something really personal, that they need time away to focus on that. I mean, if you're leaving your teammates in the middle of the fight, in the middle of the season, you must be dealing with some really jacked up stuff. So, how does your sister's birthday party figure into all of that? Was the personal leave so you could plan her party? Doubt that. I mean, it's a different dude now. But I doubt that he would abandon his teammates and coaches so he could go over the birthday guest list or get some of those candles that relight when you try to blow them out or hire a balloon artist. I doubt that he left to do all that. Then again, maybe he did. Because while he's not saying why he's not there, we can see where he actually is, partying with the fam, maskless, when he's supposed to be out sorting through personal issues. Just Kyrie doing Kyrie things. When asked about it, Nets GM Sean Marks issued the following statement. We are aware of the video. Kyrie remains away from the team for personal reasons. A date of his return is yet to be finalized. End quote. Never a good thing when a team has to release a statement which reads in part, we are aware of the video. Still better, though, than Coach Steve Nash saying that initially he had not seen the video, which had to be a lie. And if it's not a lie, it's a bad thing. You know, sort of like, quote, being aware of the video. When somebody is, quote, aware of a video, it's never that they're aware of a highlight video. It's not like they're aware of something awesome that happened. If somebody says they're, quote, aware of a video, that means somebody was in the, bless you, that means somebody was in the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong thing, and probably put themselves in that spot. We're aware of it. Speaking of Nash, if you thought that statement from the Nets was bad, check out the latest response from the coach. Yesterday, Joe Vardon asked Nash if he was sure or at least confident that Kyrie would return at some point this season.
Sure. You know, like I said, right now, I got to focus on coaching this team and getting the best out of them. So I can't make any, you know, predictions or prognostications about things that are outside of this building this evening.
Uh-oh! That's not good. That's below not good. Notice the question
below
was not,
good.
Are you sure that Kyrie will play this week? Are you sure Kyrie will play this month? The question was, are you sure that he'll play this season? And the response was, sure.
Sure.
Not exactly a stone cold lock, was it? Not exactly, oh, take it to the bank. Which makes this thing even more weird. Even more Kyrie. Look, I do want to take one step back. I want to give Kyrie credit for this. Kyrie has a strong record of philanthropy, of giving back. That's not up for debate here. Time and time again, Kyrie has stepped up for people in need, and that's awesome. I want to give him that. But it doesn't change the fact that what he's doing right now is really bizarre and really Kyrie and really on brand. And his brand is being weird. You see, the Kyrie experience is like this wild mix, this wild blend of generosity and selfishness, of wanting to talk a lot to the media, but then blaming the media for what he says. Of being a great player, but being a really strange teammate. And right when you thought that it couldn't get any more Kyrie, my man outdid himself last night. I need more time to finish that thought. But he's doing Kyrie things. And when you ask the coach, are you confident we're going to see him again this year? And the response is, sure.
Sure.
That's not very encouraging. So, Kyrie, what's going on, man? I mean, if you have personal issues, respect. I get that. But you're showing up at your sister's birthday party maskless. And then on a Zoom call as a volunteer of an organized event for a candidate for district attorney for Manhattan. That was last night right before tip. Is that weird? Sure.
Sure.
Foyer Aluakon.